Dear Sugar is supported by
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear song, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? I check my mailbox every day for any sugar you send my way.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. I do, as I often do, have a question for you,
okay,
which is whether in your illustrious romantic history you have ever gone back to somebody with whom you were already together after a messy breakup and tried to reignite the flame, tried to retry the case.
I haven't gone back and restarted the relationship, but I certainly have gone back and slept again with that former lover. It was my first husband. We had separated and we spent about a year trying to figure out whether we were going to get back together or get divorced. And it became clear after a few months that we were getting divorced. But a few times over the course of that year, including like a couple of months before we actually filed the papers for divorce, we ended up spending a night together.
Right.
And it was so hard. The sex was incredibly passionate and tender and beautiful and hot and painful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I actually remember crying like during sex because it was just so much, because he was somebody I loved.
Right.
It wasn't, okay, should we try again? It was that we had a bond and we were acting on it even as it was coming apart.
Right.
What about you?
Well, yeah, I nothing as dramatic as that, but I think it's sort of it's a human impulse to go back to a source of comfort, of intimacy, somebody who's known to you. I mean, much of my courtship with Aaron resided in sort of being unable to stay away from one another, even though we'd broken up. And there was this impulse to get together in a physical way, but underneath that was this question, should we be together? Did we not give this enough of a try? Are all the good things that we're finding here worth slogging through some more tough things? I feel like we are drawn back to see whether we can repair the errors of our past in a romantic setting. And we mention all this, of course, because we've got a letter that feels to me like the ultimate backslide. Backslide is kind of this sloppy shorthand for this impulse to return to past terrain, the scorched earth of our romantic past, and try to rescue something. And here we have this astonishing letter that feels to me kind of like the ultimate instance of
that. It does. Here it is. Dear Sugars, I'm a 62-year-old divorced woman and have been single for 7 years. I was married for 30 years to a man who was basically a good guy. He was a good provider, responsible with our finances, and actively involved with our 3 sons. But the second half of our marriage was miserable for me because my husband was emotionally cold. He pursued many outdoor hobbies without me. He retired early and spent more and more time at a second house we bought at the beach. I was so lonely inside our marriage. I begged him to go to counseling with me, but he wouldn't, so I went alone. I tried to find activities we could do together, but he always turned me down. I'm an affectionate person, but he would never touch me or hold me unless he wanted to have sex. After our youngest son was away at college, I realized I'd had enough of our complete lack of connection, and I decided to divorce him. I waited so long to make the final move because even though he showed no interest in strengthening our marriage, I knew he would be devastated if I left him, and he was. Except for seeing him at our youngest son's graduation 4.5 years ago, and the occasional text message greetings on birthdays or Christmas, my ex hasn't wanted any contact with me over these past 7 years since we broke up. But something has shifted recently. Our oldest son is getting married soon, and in the spirit of that upcoming occasion, my ex-husband reached out to me several months ago and invited me to meet for coffee. He wanted to break the ice so it wouldn't be awkward at our son's wedding. We were both nervous, but it went well. I let him lead the conversation and had no preconceived expectations. We decided to meet again a month later, and that time was great. We laughed and reminisced. The week after that, he invited me to drive out of town together so we could visit my 93-year-old stepmother for the day. They'd always been very fond of each other. We had such a great time, I didn't want the day to end. During our time together, he apologized for several hurtful things he'd done over the years, and we both cried. We saw each other again and have talked on the phone too, and each time he names the hurtful things he's done, and he asks me for forgiveness. He said he was sorry for not listening to me, for not going to my office parties, for not hugging me or holding my hand. He said he was sorry for shaming me when I'd gained weight. Everything changed for me as he named many, many cruel and insensitive wrongs he'd committed in our marriage. All my hurt and bitterness melted away. I've never experienced this kind of forgiveness. I have a new sense of peace and an understanding of grace. I feel a deep love for him again, and he says he has never stopped loving me. The problem is, he's engaged to be married to a woman he'd worked with and has known for years. His fiancée shares many of his outdoor hobbies. Our sons all love her, and they have made a new life together. She knows we've been meeting, but she doesn't know what we're feeling. He has only good things to say about her, but also says he never imagined we would have a chance to reunite. I have compassion for him because he's in a difficult situation. Sugars, we don't know what to do with these emotions. 2 nights ago, we talked on the phone for an hour. I feel closer to him now than I did in the last few years of our marriage. He is so attentive now when we talk. If he were single, I would reconcile with him and want to try again. I've had a few relationships since our divorce, but no one I wanted to make a life with. I've made a new life for myself, moved to a new town, have new friends and hobbies. I'm healthy and financially stable, and I'm totally surprised by my feelings. I still love him, and I'd welcome the chance to start over. I can't stop thinking about him. He texts me every day to say hello and say that he's thinking of me. He doesn't know what to do with this turnaround either. There's no instruction manual to figure this out. What advice do you have for me? Signed, totally confused.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's what I mean by, you know, the ultimate backslide. This is, you know, totally confused. Your 62-year-old divorced woman who's falling back in love with your husband, or maybe that might be overstating it, but I had a clear sense that there are so many beautiful aspects to this. Mm-hmm. I mean, to feel that sense of peace and understanding of grace, to have this husband who withheld his empathy for you and sympathy and just love for so many years, to express real regret and real specific regret, to be able to let go of that bitterness and anger, beautiful. If he were single, reconcile with him, that's an exciting possibility. He's not single.
Right. And he's engaged.
He's engaged. You know, I had a very clear sense here. Your ex has some thinking to do, and he has a decision to make. And that's before you do anything else other than, you know, continue to have a discourse with him. He's got to decide what he's going to do with his life.
Mm-hmm.
If he is in a situation where he is single again, well, then absolutely move forward and see whether there is an authentic sense of connectedness and it's possible to really remake a second marriage. You know, I think as we move through any long-term monogamous relationship, there are many marriages, you know, and you know that the first half of your marriage was fulfilling, that you liked your husband and esteemed him, and you know that you were miserable and lonely and poorly treated. Updike, who writes about marriage so beautifully in this collection, Too Far to Go, all these maple stories about the maples in this marriage coming apart. He says, every marriage tends to consist of an aristocrat and a peasant. Well, you were the peasant in the second half of your marriage, at the very least, and you don't want to be that again. And my feeling is, you know, feeling regret is, it's beautiful that your husband can bring himself there, but that's not the same as deep self-reflection about why he was that person who treated you in that way and, you know, an apology isn't the same as a deeper statement of understanding about why for years and years and years, he essentially forced you out of the marriage, but he made you be the person who was the decision maker because you begged him to get into counseling and explore all of this for years. And you stayed in the marriage, it sounds like implicitly, for the kid's sake and for the sake of stability and so forth. And, you know, he fundamentally was a bad actor in this first marriage by your own description. And not because he's a bad guy, but because he was a weak guy in the context of the marriage. And he's got to be a strong enough guy now that if he wants to re-court you, which is essentially what this is, he's courting you a second time, I feel strongly he needs to be disentangled from anybody else and truly available to you because he wasn't for the whole second half of your marriage. Mm-hmm. Does that sound too punitive?
No. I have to say, when I first read this letter, totally confused, I was swooning at the romance of this. Because in some ways, like if we can't have the fairy tale where the couple gets married and they live happily ever after, well, this is like the second version of the fairy tale.
Yeah.
Like, okay, they got married. They were together 30 years. It didn't go well. But guess what? They find each other again.
Right.
And it's incredibly sweet and romantic. And I'm really moved by your ex-husband's apologies. And I do think that clearly he's grown enormously as a person and as a partner. And that's super powerful whether you guys get together or not.
Yep.
But I think once I cut through that kind of fairy tale romance, I see that essentially what you are, totally confused, is a woman who is falling for a man who's in a relationship with another woman. Mm-hmm. And so the advice I have for you is, you know, we don't know whether or not this will work out. If you and your ex-husband decide to start dating again,
right.
You know, maybe what's happening is because of that apology and because of that time that you've spent reminiscing, you have a romantic friendship right now.
Right.
And that's a very alluring and exciting moment, but maybe it's just a moment. And I think that you, together and separately, need to explore whether you want to move more deeply into this. Do you actually want to try to date him again?
I would turn it around for the sake of boundaries, and I would say, he's got a decision to make.
Yeah, but
before you even start entertaining the notion of getting involved with him again and rewriting the ketubah, you know, the contract.
But I think that she's made that decision. I mean, that gives him all the power to decide what to do in their relationship. Obviously, she said, if he were single, I would date him. But
right,
she needs
but
to
decide,
I will only date him if he is free to date,
right.
You know? And I think that that's
But I think it's dangerous for her to even allow her thinking and her selfhood, frankly, because she's rebuilt her life. New town, new hobby. She's not just withering on the vine. She's done a lot of difficult work to kind of reconstruct her independence and her selfhood. Even if she hasn't found a romantic partner, she's happy with where she's at. And this grace and sense of peace and letting go of this rage, I, like you, was astonished. I wrote, wow,
it's
how infrequent. It is a kind of a different kind of fairy tale where the Prince Charming comes along and then he turns out to be a bad guy. And then suddenly later in life, he's Prince Charming in the sense that he's finally paying attention to her. But it's not a fairy tale marriage until Prince Charming is no longer engaged to another woman and presents himself as a true courter for her heart. And then she gets to decide, is this worth trying again? And I think it's very dangerous, totally confused, to even entertain that he is in that world of possibility until he's completely disentangled. Because you've been party. You've been the victim of this guy's inattention.
That's, to me, the absolute most important point here is that in spite of their long relationship and their deep intimacy and really decades-long union, they were married 30 years. They've been divorced 7. They were probably dating before. So, like, you know, she's known this guy about 40 years. This is a life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that if he does become single and you do decide to date, I just want to say, remember, you are not leaping back into that marriage. Like, you might date him and actually find out, you know, a month into it, just like anyone on the planet who dates anyone else on the planet, that it wasn't working out or you really should be friends or, you know, so I think that it's important to think about not what lies ahead. You know, the future isn't going to be defined by the past. Just because you were married in the past doesn't mean that you're going to get together and remarry again.
Right.
But it means that you're opening yourself up to exploring this old relationship in an entirely new light under new terms.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that, really, until and unless he's available.
Yeah.
You know, I actually know somebody
Of course
who
do.
Did this.
Yes.
She's the writer known as Mary Elizabeth Williams. Her friends call her Mary Beth, so
right.
Don't be confused if we're calling her Mary Beth. But she publishes under Mary Elizabeth Williams, and she's the author of a new fabulous memoir called A Series of Catastrophes and Miracles. And she wrote a really beautiful modern love essay in the New York Times about what happened in her marriage.
All right, let's go shake her down for her wisdom.
Hi.
Mary Beth?
Yes.
Hi, this is Cheryl Strayed. How are you?
Cheryl, I'm so happy to talk to you.
Oh, I'm thrilled to talk to you as well. I have Steve Almond here with me.
Hi, Mary Beth.
Steve, I'm almost as excited to talk to you.
Wow. All right. I'm glad there's any excitement at all. That's fabulous.
We're all very excited. We are a mutual fan club here among each other. And we have been discussing this letter from this woman who is divorced and perhaps falling in love again with her ex-husband. Have you read that letter?
Oh my God. I've read it and reread it and have thought so much about it since I read it the first time.
Well, will you tell us before we discuss her situation, tell us your story. You wrote about a situation in Modern Love in the New York Times that has some things in common with Totally Confused Situation. How long were you married before you and your husband separated?
About 15 years.
15 years.
Okay. We were in it for the long haul, and had two young children.
Yeah.
And then for a variety of compelling reasons, we broke up. But because we had young children, we really had to be very intimately involved in each other's lives. And we were really very much on the same page about the fact that that was our top priority.
Mm-hmm. And did you date other people?
Why don't we say that we were unattached adults living in the big city?
Right. You don't want your children to hear the podcast, right?
Leave it at that. Yeah.
Okay.
And so we were apart, but we were very committed to co-raising our children, and we were very involved in each other's lives in that way. You know, we actually rented an apartment in the same building so we could be close to our kids and close to each other, and just really, you know, always, even when the relationship between the two of us was not so great, to say the least, the relationship with the kids always came first. And so after some time, and I think after we both really got clarity on who we were and what we wanted and what was going on with our own stuff, we really started to have a very good friendship. Hmm. And we really started to like each other again. And I think part of that was liking what we had figured out being apart. And then he started flirting with me, and I liked it. And I have a very close friend who had been through a very similar situation, and I said to her, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to feel. I don't know what the right thing to do right now is, how to proceed. And what did you do when you were in this situation? And she said, he said what I needed to hear. Mm. And I didn't know until he said it what that was. And then he and I went out on a date, and he said, you know, I used to think that when you were married, that was it, that you didn't have to think about the relationship anymore. I remember just kind of like, yeah, that's such a thing that I can't imagine women saying. And he said, you know, now I realize if you're in a relationship, you have to be in it every day. Mm. And you have to try every day. And I thought, oh, that's the thing I needed to hear. And then we started kind of moving back together towards each other again. And it was a long process falling apart. And it was, I think, a somewhat shorter, but still it was a process getting back together. And, you know, I think in both cases, what it came down to was, at least on my side, you know, whether you're initiating a breakup or whether you're initiating a relationship, when you get to that place in your heart, when you just feel like, I'm okay and I'm prepared to be hurt. Mm. I'm okay. And if this doesn't work out, I'm still glad I did this. I'm still glad I took a risk, that there are more important things than being afraid of getting hurt. And so when I read this woman's letter, I could see very much that she's, I think, wrestling with that.
Right. Mary Beth?
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm really curious about, and you alluded to it, but I'd just like you to expand on it, is this idea that, you know, obviously you're with the same guy, but you've had two relationships with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, some things are clearly probably the same, but some things are different. Yes or
oh, yeah.
or no? I mean, what's the difference between marriage part one and marriage part two for you?
Well, it probably helped things that then I got cancer twice, in fact. Because what happened was, you know, what I learned through getting back together with someone and then also having something, you know, really devastating come into our lives was I really could see that this was someone who was committing every day and mm-hmm. who was making a choice every day. Mm-hmm. That was the big thing for me. It was just feeling like, you know, I don't have to be doing this. And this isn't because I'm afraid of what else might be out there if I'm alone. Because, you know, totally confused said this in her letter, you can be so lonely in a marriage. I think you can be lonelier in a marriage yep. in a way that is almost more profound than anything else.
Yeah.
Because it isolates you so much. It's the thing you can't talk about with your friends. It's the thing you can't tell anybody else. That profound kind of deep, despairing loneliness.
So you've changed and evolved, but you're still basically kind of the same people you were when you were first married. And I wonder if you have encountered some of the same dynamics or difficulties that you had the first time around and whether you manage them differently or have you become different people and those problems don't come up?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, ultimately, I think we are kind of at our core always very much the same personality types. And I think that's what draws us to certain people. And that's what also repels us from certain people. And, you know, he and I definitely have a sort of classic good cop, bad cop dynamic. And I'm the hothead and he's the, you know, mellow one. And that doesn't change at all, for sure. But I think what has changed is, in a weird way, I think we have more respect for our differences now. I think we have more respect for the way that our differences can really work well together because we had time in our adult lives to see what it was like being out there without that other person. And I know I'm a good person without him. I know that, like, we will both tell you that breakup needed to happen. And I felt like I think both of us really did bloom in many significant ways when we broke up. But then to take those kind of fundamental aspects of your character and come back into a relationship or just come into a relationship with someone and say, how can we use this to be a real team as opposed to being opposing forces? How can we team up? You know, it's kind of classic, I don't know, Marvel comic stuff, right? Like, are we going to be adversaries or are we going to fight on the same side? And I feel like now we fight on the same side a lot more often.
I mean, it's interesting the way you put that. It's actually even inside of a marriage often, you know, the way that you can resolve troubled times. When my husband and I are, you know, arguing a lot, we'll sometimes, you know, have a big talk. And it really does come to that. It's like, why are we against each other? Let's remember we're on the same team. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, like, what that shift can do in terms of really changing a relationship.
Mm-hmm. And you pull the things that make you so different and you can see that as strengths rather than things that need to be changed, rather than trying to change the other person.
Yeah. And I mean, Cheryl and I were noting that, you know, we're kind of on cloud nine reading this letter until we ran smack into the the problem is he's engaged.
Yeah, that's a pretty big one, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. I read this letter a couple of times because it really did speak very much to an experience I know and an emotion that I know and that feeling that I think many of us who have ended marriages, as I'm not the only one in this conversation who knows how that goes.
Right.
I think you still feel a very intimate bond with someone that you took a vow with. You still feel a really intimate bond with someone you thought you were going to spend the rest of your life with. And you certainly feel it with someone that you've had children with.
Yeah.
And so here's this woman who spent 30 years with a man who raised a family with him.
Right.
Of course, she's going to feel this bond with him.
Yeah.
And I was really, really struck reading her story, how amazing it was that she was able to get to this place of forgiveness, that she was able to get to this place of compassion and grace. And that he was able to give exactly the kind of apology we all dream that the person who has hurt us the most would give.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where that person actually specifically identifies, here's what I did wrong.
Right.
Here are the times that I failed you. And I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's powerful. And one of the questions I have for you, because it's one of the questions I have for Totally Confused, and frankly, myself, thinking of myself in this situation, is, you know, really the power of nostalgia. it's a beautiful thing to get to have coffee with your ex-husband of 30 years when he says to you, I'm so sorry, I wronged you. And I wonder, as much as I'm kind of rooting, I have to say again, the romantic in me is like, oh, I hope he breaks up with his fiance so that they can get back. But, you know, I also know the power of nostalgia, that sometimes because that forgiveness and that grace that she's found feels so beautiful and they are remembering the good times,
yeah,
that, you know, it's a very compelling thing. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to sustain them going forward in their new lives.
Oh, my God.
Were you afraid of that at all, that you were sort of just being nostalgic when you fell in love with your husband again?
Yeah, I was. I was. I was like, oh, God, am I like just kind of, you know, falling back into something that I know went wrong? I think it helped for us that I felt we really did have closure. And I remember a conversation where he said to me, I know I have to let you go. And that once we really felt like, okay, that marriage is a thing of the past and that relationship is a thing of the past, that then I could understand that whatever came next would be new and would be different and it wouldn't be a retreat. And, you know, when people say, oh, you're back together, it kind of like it would bristle me a little because I would think I'm not back. Like I'm trying to be moving forward in my life. It just happens.
It's right. Interesting.
I'm moving forward with this person. But, you know, when I read Totally Confused's letter, whenever I read the letters that people send to Dear Sugar, I listen to the podcast, I always think so often it seems like the person is really,
yeah,
they're laying it all out.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of going, be real for me. Read it back to me.
Yeah. Right.
And so when I read it back to this woman, here's what I would say. You were married for 30 years and you say that half of that was bad. You said in that letter that the second half of your marriage, 15 years of your life,
yeah,
was not good. That is deep Kimmy Schmidt in the bunker time to put in a bad relationship.
Yeah.
Totally Confused. And I completely believe, because I have experienced it, that people change. And I completely believe that you and this man are in very different places and how amazing it is that you have that maturity now and that you have this space in your lives that you can really look at each other freshly and you can look at each other released from the pain of your marriage, that you can be released from the damage that was done. But then as I read a little further on and I see Totally Confused as this woman who talks about how she stayed in it because she wanted them to launch their children into the world together. She was afraid of hurting her children. She says she was afraid of ending her marriage because she was afraid of hurting him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even when he was so actively hurting her.
Right.
And now she's at this place where she's thinking about his fiance. And you get down to the part where she talks about how they are secretly exchanging messages when he's in the beach house out of respect for her. And I thought, Totally Confused, that doesn't sound like you talking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that this woman who has been through so much and knows what it's like intimately to be hurt in love and to be hurt specifically by this man,
mm-hmm,
believes that what they are doing and what he is doing is being respectful to the woman that he has said he's going to marry.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, reading this letter, I just thought, oh my God, this woman, she deserves what we all deserve. And what, by the way, her ex-husband's fiance deserves.
Yeah,
thank you.
Which is somebody who is all in.
Right.
And this guy has not made his choice.
Yeah.
And to say, like, I've never stopped loving you while you're engaged to somebody else. I mean, I got to say, if my fiance said that to another woman, I would not be his fiance for much longer.
Right. No, I really so appreciate how you're kind of, you know, smearing the Vaseline of nostalgia off the lens here. No, in a very particular way, because Totally Confused, you know, I hope you've been listening to what Mary Beth has been saying. Among the things that really differentiate your two stories, the first thing is that your ex, when you guys were breaking up, acknowledged what was happening and why it was happening, at least to the extent that he could. He said, I need to let you go. I need to let this go. That is not how your marriage ended, Totally Confused. It ended with him being hurt, retreating into silence for a large number of years, and then suddenly coming back into your life. And as much as we can agree that it's beautiful that he apologized in a specific way and expressed that regret, that is separate and apart from what Mary Beth has said, which is she needed to hear something, not about the past and the regrets of the past and apologies, but something about how the future was going to go, the contract that was going to be redrawn. And then, assuming that your husband disentangles himself from his fiancée, which means hurting another woman, you're not going to then suddenly leap into a marriage. You should do, I think, what Mary Beth did with her ex, now current husband, which is develop a friendship and see if you guys can consciously choose one another.
You know, the thing that I also get from her that I really have hope for and that I identify with is when you get to that point of release, when you get to that point of forgiveness, when you get to that point of letting go, sometimes the last thing left are these embers of this love, of this old love that you used to have. And I think maybe what's happened for her now is the smoke has cleared around all of these other really sad, difficult, traumatic things. Yeah. And now she can see again that love that they used to have. But I don't know if she's looking at a love that they could have in the future.
I love that distinction you're drawing because it's really at the heart of it. It's like it's a wonderful thing that you can see again the first half of your marriage where you weren't lonely and neglected and so forth. But that's very different from saying this guy is now ready, we're ready to start to try to think about making another marriage.
Yeah, but my hope for her and my honest to God belief is that whatever happens next for her is that to be able to clear herself of that burden of that pain of the past just automatically opens you up to better things, automatically just frees you. And if she's in a place of forgiveness, she is in a place, I think, of strength and hope in herself.
Amen.
You know, as I said before, it's like she deserves love. This woman deserves somebody who's going to be 100% in for her. You know, she's earned it.
Yeah.
She spent a lot of time being lonely. And now I just have so much hope for her.
Yeah, me too.
Fantastic. Wow, Mary Beth, you're terrific.
Yeah.
What a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh my God. Let me, you don't know. I feel so honored to be kind of a deputy sugar for a day.
We're going to send you a little badge that is a little pin that says Deputy Sugar.
You get to walk around shaking people down for their crises.
For their emotions.
All right, Mary Beth, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
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 It's always powerful. One of my favorite things about asking the various guests onto the show is so often they can tell stories that really speak directly to the experiences of the letter writers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So, totally confused. I hope that was enlightening to you. The other thing I want to say is please, please write to us and tell us what happened.
Oh my God,
next.
You have to do that.
This is like a cliffhanger of a letter. It's a fairy tale and a cliffhanger and a romance and a thriller. I really want to know what you do. What happens next in this relationship? Please write to us. And the rest of you can also write to us. Send us your letters to DearSugarRadio@gmail.com. Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR in Boston. We are produced and edited by Lisa Tobin, with whom we've been engaged for quite some time.
That's right.
And faithfully, too, I might add.
Thank you.
We're recording at Talkback Sound and Visual in Portland, Oregon. Josh Millman is our engineer. Our theme music is by the Portland musicians known as Wonderly. The vocals are by Liz Weiss. Please listen and subscribe on iTunes. We love you. We are true to you. We will always go back to you.
Yeah, that's right. We might divorce you for 6 days, but on the 7th day, we get back together with you.